From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. 1 in 6 children face some kind of mental health concern each year, and 50% of mental health issues start to emerge before a child is 14 years old. Now, that's according to the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Now, there has been more focus on kids and mental health, especially after COVID-19 school lockdowns, but help is too often in short supply, and parents and caregivers, well, they're left struggling to find ways to help their children. Dr. Christine M. Crawford is the Associate Medical Director with National Alliance on Mental Health, and she decided to put together a guide for parents and families and caregivers, as well as teachers, that can provide support as they help these students and kids navigate these challenges. The book is called You Are Not Alone for Parents and Caregivers, and we are lucky enough to have Dr. Crawford joining us now to talk more about this. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You know, Dr. Crawford, this is such a crisis, to put it bluntly, and I'm curious as to why you decided to write a book in particular for, you know, parents and caregivers.
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. Kids are really struggling, but I also know that a lot of caregivers are struggling too. When they have kids who are experiencing mental health challenges or changes in their behavior, oftentimes they don't know where to start. They don't know where to turn to help guide them in the right direction so that they can take care of their kid. It could be overwhelming, and for a lot of caregivers, they feel like they have to reinvent the wheel when it comes to assembling a team of support around their kid for their mental health challenges. And what I also know to be true is that there are very few child and adolescent psychiatrists across the country. There are about 10,000 of us, and a lot of parents have to wait many months before their kids are able to be evaluated by psychiatrists or other mental health providers. And so there are a lot of people who are kind of empty-handed in terms of having the tools and strategies that they need to take care of their mental health. So I wanted to write this book so that parents could have a comprehensive guide, a resource that can guide them in the right direction for understanding mental health conditions, mental health symptoms in kids, and to have a book that they can use all throughout their kids' development, rather than having to grab all these different separate books that are more focused on specific conditions. This book is more focused on understanding your kid, how to talk to your kid, and what mental health symptoms could look like in kids as young as 3, all the way up to age 18.
So before we talk more about mental health, can we talk a little bit about your work at the National Alliance on Mental Illness and what this organization is?
Yes. So NAMI is the country's largest grassroots organization that's dedicated to mental health and dedicated to improving the lives of people who are living with mental health conditions. We have support groups for people with lived experience, but also support groups for family members so that they can take better care of the loved ones in their lives who are living with mental health conditions. We also have educational workshops that really teach people what it is that they need to know when it comes to navigating the mental health system. And they're able to rely on each other to learn about what makes the most sense of, you know, in terms of guiding their mental health journey, especially in their local area. And we're also big on advocacy, thinking about what policy changes need to be put in place to allow people to better support their mental health. And so this is the organization that's available all throughout the country. Our resources are free. We have a tremendous amount of resources on NAMI.org. And we're really happy with the fact that now we have a series of books out that can provide even more tools and resources for people to better understand mental health.
My understanding is that you treat children and teenagers at Boston Medical Center who are experiencing mental health issues. Are you seeing trends?
Absolutely. And so at Boston Medical Center, I happen to see young people who are experiencing a lot of issues related to social determinants of health, who are coming from areas in which are under-resourced, and also coming from households in which there are lots of challenges and parents are facing financial pressures and stress. And with all of that, I'm seeing that kids are experiencing more severe symptoms from their mental health conditions. And what I mean by that is we're seeing kids with depression, but we're seeing kids present with symptoms of depression at much younger ages. And when they experience depression, it's so bad that kids as young as 5 have thoughts about ending their own lives. When I say that to people, it's hard for them to wrap their minds around the idea that a 5-year-old would experience such profound symptoms of depression that they are contemplating suicide. And that is what I'm actually seeing in my clinical practice. I'm seeing anxiety that's interfering with a kid's ability to go to school. So I see kids who are missing months and months out of the school year because their anxiety is so severe. And so it's been deeply concerning to me that all of these delays in getting kids into mental health treatment is making it such that kids are losing critical months and years of their lives, and they're losing opportunities to gain all the skills that are necessary for their development overall.
I think there's been a lot more focus on children's mental health since COVID-19 and schools went to lockdown, kids went remote. And then there's this idea that, well, see, this is why we have this mental health crisis. I'm curious about your thoughts on this because I'm a mom and I kind of challenge that in a way that I'm like, I think that we've had mental health issues for quite a long time. I think that COVID just brought it to the forefront. And now we are talking about it more.
I absolutely, absolutely agree with you. We were dealing with a youth mental health crisis long before COVID-19. We really were. What I was seeing prior to the pandemic was kids, as I mentioned before, experiencing depression, thoughts of suicide, and oftentimes entering into the emergency room, which was the first time that they were actually interacting with a mental health clinician. It was during a time of crisis. The other thing that we saw too was that there are so few inpatient psychiatric beds available for children, that there aren't a lot of treatment centers that are dedicated to child mental health. And so a lot of kids would present to emergency rooms, and especially in Boston, which is pretty well resourced, they can wait 1 week to 2 weeks in an emergency room just so that they can be placed in an inpatient psychiatric unit. And we are still struggling with those challenges today. There's just not enough providers. There's just not enough treatment facilities. And that was the case even before the pandemic. But I'm encouraged by the fact that the pandemic really highlighted how important it is to think about mental health, how impactful mental health can be on one's ability to function. Everyone was struggling during the pandemic, and more people were able to relate to what it is like living with depression and what it was like to live with anxiety. But what we are seeing now is that kids need access to help, and they're still struggling with being able to get that help that they need.
I know you've mentioned getting that mental health diagnosis, and you write quite a bit about this in the book as well. And here in Idaho, for example, we need not only more beds, we need more mental health providers. And this is not a knock on what our providers are doing. I think we have excellent providers here. The issue is that so many kids are in this mental health crisis. So with that said, how hard is it to get this mental health diagnosis when you're waiting, as you said, weeks, months, or you have to find yourself in an emergency room to finally be face to face with a mental health provider?
Yeah, and that's part of the reason why I wrote this book, because There are a lot of parents who sit and they wait for an appointment to see me. So they wait many months and then I see them for an hour. At the end of the hour, they want me to give them an answer to what is, quote, wrong with their child, and they want me to provide a solution and they want me to fix the problem. But the issue is that me providing a diagnosis provides some language for understanding what it is that the kid is going through, but I'm only meeting with them for an hour. And then they have to return back to their homes, back to their lives, with their families, with their caregivers. And the families are struggling with, okay, I have this diagnosis, but how do I interact with my child? How do I support my child? What do I do outside of these appointments with the mental health clinician? And that's where families are really, really struggling. It's all those other moments outside of, you know, receiving the diagnosis, outside of treatment and what have you. And that's why I really try to focus on preventative mental health. I talk about strategies in which people can be proactive about supporting the mental health of their kids long before they present in a state of crisis. The other thing when it comes to the mental health diagnosis is that it's not a label that we're assigning to kids, a label that we're saying, this is what's wrong with you, this is the problem with you. But the diagnosis allows us to better understand how it is the kid is behaving and to use very simple, efficient language within the clinical community to talk about and describe kind of the constellation of symptoms that the kid is presenting with. But that's not helpful for the parent, right? You know, if the parent is hearing that their kid has schizophrenia, okay, well then what? What do you do with that, right? And so the other thing that we know about diagnosis is that it allows for people to access additional supports, like through the schools, to be able to get an individualized educational program, also known as an IEP. But people need to realize that some schools actually have mental health supports that are embedded within these schools that are able to do somewhat comprehensive evaluations to provide some sort of diagnosis so that kids can access additional supports in schools. And so this chapter talking about the diagnosis and what it means is a very complicated situation, but hopefully I could touch upon all the nuances that really are overwhelming to a lot of parents as they're navigating this. But at the end of the day, I just want families to know that the diagnosis isn't a label for your kid. It just allows us to understand your kid better, to communicate with your kid, and maybe even access some additional resources within the school.
I know you're a mom, and I'm wondering if that influenced you deciding to write this book as well.
Absolutely, because I remember when I was pregnant with my first child, I didn't know what to do. Everything was overwhelming. I was really scared. And I just wanted some sort of guide on how I can navigate, you know, the pregnancy and what to expect, you know, after delivery. And I remember reading books that were so comforting to me that I felt somewhat empowered because there were some strategies that these books provided. But I realized that there isn't anything that's comprehensive that I could think of off the top of my head when it comes to youth mental health. A lot of the youth mental health books are really specific to certain diagnoses, and it makes it such that parents read these books and then they're diagnosing their kid. But I didn't want that for a lot of families. I want families to be curious about their kid's behavior, to better understand their kid and understand the unique aspects of their brain and how they think, but also to connect with their kid through conversations. And so I hope that this book can provide that sort of guidance that books that, you know, helped me during my pregnancy, you know, I found them to be quite helpful. But what we know to be true is that there's no roadmap for being a good parent, for telling you exactly what to do. But I hope this book just gives people more tools that they can put in their toolbox as they're trying to support the emotional development of their children.
You know, I think parents have a lot of questions when their child is struggling, and I will share, and I only share this because my son shares it. My youngest has ADHD, and he's got some anxiety around that, not to the extent as you talked about earlier, but I mean, it does impact him. It impacts our family. And I think that when you see your child struggling, it's almost like you feel like, okay, is this my fault? First off, why is it happening? And then it's like, okay, I'm just a bad parent, right? Like, I think you have all of these questions about what have we done to or not done, and what are we doing or not doing to make it worse or better? So I know in the book you talk about these reactions, but you also talk about this idea of the problem-solving mode. Can you tell us what this is, but then actually how it might hurt the situation?
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. I think what's really interesting about parents blaming themselves when it comes to mental health issues is that that's really not an issue that comes up often when it comes to medical issues. You don't see parents blaming themselves when their kid has asthma or when their kid has allergies to certain things. That doesn't come up. But when it comes to mental health problems, it's interesting how parents are very quick to blame themselves. And I remind parents that this is not your fault. But what is encouraging is that they're curious about what they can do to better support their kid. And that's the most important thing. The other thing that we like to do as parents is that, yes, we like to problem solve. So we see that there's an issue, we want to fix it right away. But sometimes when we're really driven by a problem and finding a solution, we often kind of further distance ourselves from connecting with our child because we're so busy looking at how we could solve this problem. We're going on Google, we're talking to people about what is wrong with them, we're bringing them into all these different appointments, but we're not having conversations with the kid to understand what is kind of their understanding about what's happening to them. How do they feel about what it is that they're experiencing? So I've been noticing that as people, as parents are kind of stuck in really prioritizing problem-solving mode, they often lose sight of connecting with the kid and supporting the kid through this process.
What I appreciated about the book as well is that you actually talked with parents. And I know you talked to, there was a mom in Iowa that you talked to, but you also talked to teachers, including Jody in Michigan. Why was it important for you to make sure that you put in these real life examples and frankly, that were very vulnerable?
Yes. You know, so in NAMI, you know, we are a community of folks with lived experience, people who have walked this mental health journey themselves, as well as families and caregivers. And so it was important for me to include that in the book because that is the true spirit of NAMI. It's a community of support, a community of people with lived experience. But also I wanted to emphasize the point that the real experts when it comes to mental health are the people with lived experience. I'm a clinical expert, but that's not all the expertise that is helpful to families of children who are struggling with mental health problems. So interviewing over 80 people across the country, as you already mentioned, you know, teachers, parents, but also kids themselves, I wanted them to share with their readers what were things that were helpful for them along their mental health journey. And I also wanted people reading this book to know that they are not alone in having some of these concerns about their kids' mental health, about facing different challenges as it relates to navigating the mental health system. But a lot of families feel alone on this journey. And that's because they don't really talk to other people about it. They feel like they got to keep it within their families and problem solve on their own. So it was really important for me for families to know that there are other people who have been through a similar experience, who are currently going through this experience, so that they do not feel alone in this at all.
You know what's so interesting about that is when our son was diagnosed with ADHD, I had no intention of talking about it with anyone. Because it was something that was, you know, this was his diagnosis. I didn't feel like it was my story to tell other people. He was 7 years old. He started telling everybody about it. And but I think it became empowering to him. I mean, to the point that I had other parents reach out to me saying, like, thank you that for him talking about this, because my kid has it and now they're all at school and they're talking about it and it's being normalized. I am still stunned that at 7 years old, my child could do that. And I also don't think he had the intentionality of bringing everyone together, but it is that idea of, if he hadn't shared that, we probably would have been in this little bubble by ourselves.
Yeah. And so that's what's so powerful about people being vulnerable and opening up about their mental health experiences. And that's what NAMI is all about, is connecting with each other through storytelling. And the fact that your child, when he was seven, was doing that is certainly powerful, because that then grants permission and opens the door for other people to feel comfortable sharing what it is that they're going through in terms of their mental health, and to kind of normalize the experience of having some challenges related to your mental health, and, you know, and that being okay, and that being part of who you are and kind of making you all unique. And in the same way that we kind of normalize some medical conditions that people have. And so, you know, being open and upfront about mental health challenges normalizes conversations about talking about when you're struggling. Because when you do that, that allows people to connect with you and offer up help and support. But we need to not keep it within ourselves, to keep it inside, because then we'll miss out on opportunities to connect with other people and to get the help and support that we need.
So what about if a child is truly in emotional distress? What can a parent or caregiver do when a child is struggling right in that moment?
If a kid is struggling right in the moment and you're noticing that they are not functioning, that they can't do basic things that children ought to be doing. Like if they're not sleeping well, they're not eating well, they're not going to school, they're not getting to bed, I suggest and strongly recommend that parents and caregivers call their pediatrician or the kid's primary care provider. Oftentimes, a lot of parents forget to do that. And they forget that mental health issues are actually primary care issues. So if you have a kid who is struggling, you can actually call the primary care office and say that this is what's going on. And they can actually schedule a same day appointment with you and your child, or they can even direct you to receive more immediate supports. But a lot of people forget to pick up the phone and call their pediatrician. And they need to remember that, because mental health issues are primary care issues, and a lot of pediatricians are well trained to diagnose and treat a number of mental health issues in children.
So I want to ask you this question. What do you tell parents who don't know if or how their child is behaving is a typical part of growing up, or if they are acting out because of a mental health issue? Because I think especially when it's your first child, I definitely, when my oldest started middle school, he struggled those first couple of months. And I was like, oh my gosh, are we in a mental health crisis? And sort of kind of realizing that, yes, it was hard for him. Middle school is hard, but helping him navigate that and realizing that, at least in his situation, it really was more about that part of that phase of life versus him really having a mental health crisis.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, for me as a psychiatrist, it really just goes back to, how are they functioning? And if the changes in their mood and behavior is impacting multiple areas of their life, is it interfering with multiple domains of their life? And what I mean by that is, a lot of parents may see a challenge, a behavioral issue at home or in their interactions with their kid, and it might only be limited to that environment. But if you are seeing that there are issues that are emerging in school, in the relationships with extended family members, in relationships with their friends, And physically, it seems like they are not coping and they're not doing well. That is suggestive of a more serious issue that is going on, rather than kind of the typical ups and downs that we see in kids as they age and grow and developing over time. It's more about, is this getting in the way of their ability to function in the home and outside in the home in different settings? Because that consistency and noticing that pattern of functional impairment is really the true definition of a mental health issue.
What concrete tips can you give to parents who may be just beginning this journey and they are worried about their child's mental health?
So in the book, I talk about this concept of look, listen, and lock in. These are three simple things that parents and caregivers can do each and every day with their kid. When it comes to look, that's just really kind of noticing any changes in how your kid is acting and behaving. You want to listen to your kids. You want to have conversations with your kid in which they are doing more of the talking and you're doing more of the listening, right? We are so used to having conversations with our kids in which we are instantly providing reassurance. No, you're fine. Don't worry about that. Everything is going to be okay. But rather just listen and listen from a place of curiosity. And say if you have a conversation, you're listening to your kid and they're expressing some concerns, you want to lock in that moment. You want to be fully present and engaged in that conversation, but you want to also lock in additional supports around that kid to help stabilize the kid, depending on where they're at in terms of their mental health journey. So that's kind of pulling in resources such as resources that are available in the schools, resources that are available in the community in the form of different support groups that are available through NAMI. You want to lock in on supports for yourself as a caregiver so that you have what it takes, all the tools and support that is necessary in order to support your kid along their mental health journey. So those are
So
three things that I talk about in the book.
you mentioned, and I'm sorry to interrupt, you mentioned support groups through NAMI. So I am assuming this is something that anyone can be a part of, no matter where you live. Because I'm thinking, even here in Idaho, as I mentioned, we have not enough resources, but we're also a rural state. So then there are pockets of the state that have zero access to mental health. So is this a good option?
No, it's an excellent option because these support groups are local. So we have affiliates. We have about 630 affiliates all throughout the country. And so in Idaho, if you're struggling to figure out how to navigate the mental health system, in your area, turning to NAMI is actually really helpful because you can connect with other parents who have had to figure out how to navigate the system within that given state. And you can learn from other people who have walked the same journey. So that's why we really encourage parents to turn to support groups so they can learn about what the resources are that have been really helpful to other people in the area.
So in particular, you talk in the book about building a team of people to help your child. So again, if you are in, a place like Idaho, maybe a rural area, this seems like what a great access point is through NAMI, as you mentioned, because you're making those connections maybe with other parents.
That's right. And some of those connections are actually really important to have that type of support. And a lot of parents tend to prioritize getting their kid into care, getting their kid into seeing a therapist or a psychiatrist. But as you already mentioned, access is an issue. And so there are steps that parents can take in the meantime while they're waiting, to connect with a clinician. And this is a really great step to take to reach out to NAMI to connect with some of those supports and to tap into some of the educational workshops that we offer.
How does insurance and Medicaid figure into this? Because sometimes, even if you have insurance, certain care providers don't accept insurance.
Yeah, and that further makes this situation complicated, because there are such few child mental health providers, and a number of them are in private practice and do not accept insurance, which creates a huge barrier, a financial barrier for a lot of families. And that's why I again emphasize the point of going to your child's pediatrician, because oftentimes those pediatric practices have mental health clinicians already embedded in those clinics. And so if you express concerns to your pediatrician about your kid's mental health, they can do a screening, they can do their own evaluation, and they may be able to connect you to individuals within their clinic or even outside of the clinic who might accept your child's insurance. And because they are used to seeing kids in the community who may have a similar insurance plan, they may be able to better guide you in the direction in which you can find a mental health provider who may accept your insurance. So again, talk to your pediatrician because there actually might be supports already in place within that given clinic.
Before I let you go, one of the things that you stress is that this is a journey. There is not an instant cure. Even when you find a diagnosis, or even a doctor, that's just a first step in the process. How important is it for parents and caregivers to truly understand that this really is a journey?
It is a journey, and I think that a lot of parents believe that as soon as your kid sees a mental health provider, they get a diagnosis, they start treatment, that everything is going to be better. But kids grow up and things change. And mental health symptoms and conditions change and evolve over time, over the course of a child's development. And so, if something looks like ADHD in a 7-year-old, things may evolve to look like something different when the kid is 15 or 17 years old. And to be with your kid, and to be a support with your kid along this journey as they experience ups and downs, changes in their behavior and their moods, and to just accept that fact that you're there to help guide them along this journey, and that hopefully the tools in this book will make that path, to help highlight, what steps you need to take as part of your journey. And then there's also NAMI that can also serve as a critical part, a very helpful part, on your child's mental health journey.
I want to thank you so much for taking all of this time today to talk with us. It is so appreciated. Such an important conversation to be having. We've been talking with Dr. Christine Crawford. She is a child psychiatrist and author of the book, You Are Not Alone, for Parents and Caregivers. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.